So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review Away.
Welcome to Review Away, everybody. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting, where we are back in our Toronto studios after our cross-country tour. Myself in Las Vegas, Wei in Minnesota. But Wei, we are back here in our home base.
Yeah, we are. We're back in the great nation of Canada.
You did not speak to Brock Lesnar in Minnesota, but I understand that you had quite a great time there, covering a lot of mixed martial arts there.
No, it was. I mean, it wasn't a lot. It was one event. But then we also went to the Greg Nelson camp, where Sean Sherk also trains, and we talked to him. The guy showed up. He wasn't even training that day. He just showed up to the gym just to talk to us.
Well, that's excellent. Las Vegas was fun as well.
Yeah, it was. Tell me about it.
Well, we did a bunch of one-on-ones for the Fight Network. The big one being Jim Ross, where I did a one-hour sit-down interview with, right. with Jim Ross. And you just heard part of that interview tonight, and the second part will be airing next week. Mm-hmm. And next week as well on the Fight Network, the entire 60-minute interview will be airing as a one-hour special. So
wow. Yeah, I actually remember you talking about this. I actually remember it from the Bite Radio podcast, where you and Jason Agnew detail your trip very well.
At bite.ca/radio.
That's
yes,
right.
That is indeed correct. Right? Something you are also a part of sporadically.
Once in a while.
Yeah. We bought you a shot glass in Las Vegas.
I heard.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
Yes.
For more details and more hilarity and enjoyment, please check out Bite Radio podcast.
As our shameless plugs.
Bite.ca/radio.
It's a Saturday morning, Wei. I'm a little tired. How are you?
I'm pretty tired too, man.
You and I went to the Toronto Blue Jays game on Friday evening. Bret Hart was throwing out the first pitch for March of Dimes Canada.
Yeah.
And we went there. We interviewed Bret. And then Bret threw out the first pitch. It was against the Oakland A's. Mm-hmm. I was not allowed onto the field to, because only you were allowed to go onto the field to record him throwing out the pitch. I got to see him warm up in the back playing catch with Sean Markham, where I worried that he almost broke his hand because he took a baseball right off of his hand.
That's right.
You got to see the actual pitch. How did it look?
Yeah, it actually looked all right. He actually did pretty well. I was afraid that he wouldn't even be able to hit the
mound.
Home plate.
Yeah. The mound is what you pitch off of.
Yeah, yeah. But no, he got a pretty good one out there. But yes, this was our first meeting with Bret Hart since our documentary, and wow, the reunion.
Yeah, it was great to catch up with Bret. So,
well, how did it go down? Remind the listeners.
Well, we got there. We met up with Bret. Said hello, Bret. Good to see you again. He smiled and nodded his head. And at this point, I looked at you, Wei, and I tried to mentally send this message to you that I do not think this guy remembers us.
I had no clue who we were.
So, thank you to all of you who have watched our documentary, Survival of the Hitman. We can only hope that Bret has watched it, and we're not sure if he necessarily
remembered
us.
Yeah, even if he did watch it, I doubt he'd remember our faces anyway. The guy does, 50 interviews a day? Whatever.
So we move on, Wei, to our review, and we're going to be getting to a lot of feedback during this episode because we didn't get to any last week. We were very rushed at our studio last weekend as we were getting ready to do a bunch of other stuff, and we had to get out of there by a certain time. So we have all the time in the world today, and boy, do I want to have it for Slamboree 1993, Wei, which took place on May the 23rd of 1993 at the Omni in Atlanta, Georgia. Now, I had severe difficulties reviewing this because I had a VHS copy of this because I couldn't find it online anywhere. I watched the entire VHS, the two-hour edition of it, and throughout the show, there were certain references to things like, on a night where we've seen Paul Roma join the Horsemen, Slamboree continues. And I thought, I didn't see that. And it was just quick cuts to the next match. And then thankfully, a listener posted the entire thing online, and they edited down the event for their VHS release. So there was tons of stuff I missed and had to go back and rewatch, well, not rewatch, but fill in the holes that I had missed. So it took quite a bit of an effort for me to see this entire pay-per-view event. And all I can say is WCW home video at the time, terrible. Why would you edit down an event?
Why would you? Why would you edit out this gold, such as
Were you recording it on, like, LP or something? Like, was the tape speed not allowing you to put more than 2 hours on?
That's what I'm thinking. Maybe they can only afford the two-hour SP tapes, and they wanted SP quality, so they only had 2 hours to work with.
Idiots. Let's get into this event, Wei.
Actually, if you were to watch, if you watch the online version, it actually says this tape has been recorded in EP, and adjust your tracking for best quality. That's what it says on the online version, which is the full version. So
fantastic.
Maybe that has something to do with it.
We get the opening graphics, Wei, of legends from the past such as Vern Gagne, Mr. Wrestling 2, Jimmy Snuka, Ole Anderson. The whole pay-per-view is based around the Legends reunion and bringing in everybody. Your announcers for this event are Tony Schiavone and Larry Zbysko, and they show in the ring all of the Legends. Lou Thesz is out there, Vern Gagne, The Crusher, Don Owen, Magnum TA, many others. And they're just standing there in the ring. Mm-hmm. And then they announce that tonight's main event is Big Van Vader versus the British Bulldog for the world title. And all of a sudden we get Max Payne coming out to play his electric guitar as the Legends continue to stand in the ring. And then these jacked up dudes come out carrying a caravan, and the fabulous Moolah comes out, and they announce her as the Queen of Slamboree 93 as Max Payne continues to play his electric guitar, because that's what I associate with Fabulous Moolah.
Exactly.
Is an electric guitar.
Yeah.
These dudes who came out, I will say that of all the events we have reviewed, there were never so many candidates for the Scott Putski Award as there were tonight, and we're actually going to keep track of them. These five are all going to be nominated to start with.
Okay,
as we continue tonight, we're going to add more nominations, and then we're going to make a decision at the end. Because
let me write these down. Okay, so for five, Scott Putski Award nominees.
Okay, just put up Moolah's Men.
Moolah's Men.
There were five of them, I believe.
At the end, we'll pick a winner.
Yeah, there are a lot of nominees. There's going to be more nominees than there were for Best Picture this year.
Mm-hmm.
Then we throw to Eric Bischoff and Missy Hyatt. And at this point, I think they were trying to kill time. Missy Hyatt said, "Salut, eh," to her friends in Canada. Then they expect a video package to play, but it doesn't play. At this point, this is where Bischoff cites technical difficulties, and they keep just talking. And then in mid-sentence...
The lights turn out.
Yeah, I couldn't even notice the lights going out.
Oh, I did. They were completely black.
Did it go black? Because I saw a crowd shot. They went to a crowd shot. Maybe I wasn't looking.
Maybe you were watching the tape and not the...
They might have edited out the part where it goes black.
That would have made sense.
Which is something they didn't do too much of at that time.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, Bischoff, "Hey, we have the power back on." And they then talk about the Hollywood Blondes, and Missy Hyatt implies that they are the best team of the 90s, meaning that one person in WCW realized this, as they were broken up months later. And then she offers to be their groupie.
No, you've had dealings with Missy Hyatt, haven't you?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we had her on Fight Network Radio once, where she was supposed to come on, didn't come on. Then I rescheduled her to come on. This time she no-showed again. So I was upset on the radio, and I started ranting about all the dealings I had with this woman and trying to get her on the air, and mid-rant she called in. Awkward. We then go to our first match. We never saw Eric Bischoff or Missy Hyatt again, did we?
Eric Bischoff we saw.
Okay.
Not Missy Hyatt.
Bobby Eaton and Chris Benoit versus Too Cold Scorpio and Marcus Alexander Bagwell. I've come to realize that no matter what event we pick, we cannot escape Chris Benoit. He's in, like, everything we pick.
He's in everything. No matter what territory, what organization, he just creeps up.
Our sixth nominee for the Scott Putski Award is Marcus Alexander Bagwell, ladies and gentlemen.
Alexander
in his early 20s at this time, and about to protrude out of his skin. Just tons of roid use in this roster.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Scorpio comes out to Way's favorite theme song, "Here Comes Too Cold Scorpio." And him and Bagwell proceeded to dance inside of the ring.
They're so goofy. They just get in there and do these goofy high fives and shimmy around.
Bagwell should have had a giant sign that just said "white" with an arrow that pointed down.
I actually think they both should have, even Scorpio. Wow.
We did go to one sign in the crowd that said "Marcus is great." Disagree.
His mom.
It was Judy.
Yeah.
Who was also on the phone explaining why he wouldn't be able to make the forthcoming TV tapings. We get a fish out of water spot early by Benoit and Scorpio to start the match. There was this great heel spot where, even though he was the baby face, I believe, I don't know, Benoit just walks over and delivers a knee to Bagwell, who's just standing on the apron as he's not even the legal man. He just walks over and knees him in the gut and walks back to Scorpio. Yeah. Great. Shivani mentions that Jesse Ventura is currently in a hospital, and Zbyszko offers his sympathy by stating, "Better him than me." Mm. Bobby Eaton goes over the top rope, which at the time was illegal in WCWA. I noted in this match that Benoit was wearing zebra tights, which looked terrible. Zbyszko then noted that the video of this event is going to become a collector's item. No, I can say wholeheartedly it's not a collector's item. Nope. Benoit misses a top rope headbutt, leads to a hot tag with Scorpio coming in. Scorpio sets up Benoit in the corner and hits a rotating splash, but they fuck up the pin because Eaton broke up the pinfall as Nick Patrick counts three. So they improvise with Scorpio then climbing the top rope, and just basically now he hits a corkscrew guillotine and lands right on Benoit's head.
He sits on Benoit's face.
Like concussion, easily here.
Drops his ass on Benoit's face.
And he gets the pin, and I'm sure Scorpio was pissed at one Bobby Eaton after this match. Totally fucked up the finish. But a good matchup.
Yeah, it was a good match. Scorpio and Eaton, Benoit, all very good.
Best use of Bagwell at this time. This is probably when he was at least mobile at the time. Hide him in a tag match. Good use of Bagwell. Shivani then discusses the recently debuting Colonel Robert Parker, who tried to recruit Van Hammer. Very poor judge of talent was this Colonel Robert Parker. And Hammer turned him down. And then Parker has gotten somebody new. So Van Hammer comes out, and he should have had a sign that read, "Seventh Nominee of the Night."
Oh, there we go. Van Hammer.
They noted his full moniker way was Heavy Metal Van Hammer, in case we didn't get the Eddie Van Halen reference enough. Yeah. They are going to tie him in with Heavy Metal Van Hammer. Definitely not to be confused with Heavy Metal out of Mexico.
I didn't make that connection.
Colonel Robert Parker comes out to introduce his new wrestler. I should be a big fan of this guy because his gimmick was basically J.R. Ewing, but didn't work for me. They bring out a stretcher, which Parker is referring to as a gurney, and Zbyszko notes that where I come from, that's called a stretcher. And then he introduces Sid, our eighth nominee of the night.
There we go. Sid,
holy
Sid
fuck.
Yeah, Sid makes his return to the WWE.
This was your recruit. Basically, these were two clones in the ring, everybody. Mm-hmm. It was like there was a mirror, and a guy was fighting a mirror. Sid was the heel in this match, though no one clued him into this. He came out and acted like a complete babyface. He played to the crowd, got a tremendous response. This match was 35 seconds. He powerbombed Van Hammer. Match is over. Then Sid gets on the second rope to get cheers from the crowd. Wow, what a heel here. And he was booked as a heel moving forward. So I think this was Sid going into a little bit of business
for
himself.
This was a big debut, his re-debut with WCW. And
you just killed a babyface.
Yeah, but you can't help. You know, he's a big star. He just came back from the WWF. And you can't help but be cheered.
Smart booking, though. 35 seconds.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with it.
We then go to our first of three Legends matches. And this one, Dick Murdoch, Don Morocco, and Jimmy Snuka versus Wahoo McDaniel, Blackjack Mulligan, and Jim Brunzel. Morocco came out wearing a Surfboards Hawaii shirt. All I could think of seeing Snuka here was what we saw at Wizard World. Guaranteed, this match, it was 17 years ago. Snuka, I still do not want to see wrestle, even back in 1993.
I'd like to nominate him for the Scott Putz.
Okay, well, let's put him in there because he looked very
Jimmy Snuka
in shape for a 50-plus-year-old man.
Oh, my God.
Now, what I found interesting was that for all the Legends footage, they took footage that I know was done in color, and they just put it in black and white.
Yeah, it's like...
they just put a filter on it.
It's very stupid because the thing about wrestling is that wrestling is... one of the main appeals of pro wrestling is that it's colorful. It's a colorful television show. And when you make it black and white, they just all look the same. Guys all look the same. I couldn't tell who was who.
Brunzel was wearing some rainbow tights, way. Some awesome fashion here on this show. Mulligan here got tagged in, and looked for every shortcut in the book here. He was looking for heat from the crowd, before he did an arm twist on Jimmy Snuka. This guy could do nothing. Tony Schiavone clearly put to use his PWA almanac on this because he would not shut up with the fucking stats of every single guy, and it came across like he was just reading this. Very, very annoying. We saw a flying head scissors by Dick Murdoch, which to me was the high spot of this match. Match got a lot of time. Crowd did not seem into it.
Mm-mm.
And at least we got the payoff of a double count out. So even retired legends would not agree to do a job here. So we got a double count out finish.
No, I mean, I was one of the people who was pretty bored by this match. Not only because the wrestling wasn't spectacular, but simply because I didn't grow up watching a lot of these guys, so I didn't really care. And the audio was out of sync on the Daily Motion video. But what I will say, though, that no one was that terribly out of shape. I mean, we see Hogan and Flair today and how immobile they are. None of these guys were at that point yet.
None of them were sad in the ring, and this was a six-man tag. You weren't asking a whole lot of each guy.
Yeah.
We then go to our next Legends match, and it's Ivan Koloff and Baron Von Raschke against Thunderbolt Patterson and Bob Armstrong. Armstrong doesn't come out, so Patterson is in the ring.
Armstrong just had back surgery or something.
Knee surgery, yeah. But unfortunately, I guess no one had any knowledge of this until his music played. They were all ready for him to come out. They just thought, well, he's not here today. Not in his locker room. We'll play his music, and I'm sure he'll be fine. And then, oh, he had knee surgery.
Well,
you would have thought that they would have prepared for this.
I suppose these video packages were tough to re-edit on the fly.
I'll tell you what was tough. If they were doing closed captioning for this, for Thunderbolt Patterson's promo, did you pay any attention to his promo?
I couldn't if I wanted to.
Excuse me. They tell me that Bob has got a bad operation on his knee. So it don't make no difference to me. I will kick both of y'all in the back down.
What'd he say?
What did you think of Thunderbolt Patterson, Way?
I thought it was very weird. This guy came out in a WCW Slamboree shirt and then said...
He was dancing around.
What did he say? I was kick your ass. Is that what he said?
He introduced... Bob Armstrong's son, Brad Armstrong, with a giant mullet, came out, and Patterson instructed him to take off your shirt. And it was now going to be a tag match with Thunderbolt Patterson and Brad Armstrong against Koloff and Von Raschke.
So here we have Thunderbolt Patterson, who was about to receive a 2-on-1 beatdown from Koloff and Raschke. And then this Brad Armstrong, this young, strapping, 20-something-year-old... huge man comes to even the odds, and it was just so sad to see these two old men being beaten down by this young muscular kid.
This 24-year-old baby face comes out to beat up two old men.
Oh yeah, that's really
it's criminal.
It was.
Armstrong was one of the many baby faces who he would do the punch and then he'd do the double elbow babyface thing for the crowd. I hate that.
They punch and then they look towards the crowd for
approval.
And
they just move their arms like, yeah. Would you ever do that in a fight? I actually would. If I was in a fight, I'd play with the crowd. But I'd probably lose the fight.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter, though. I'd win in losing. Because I'd be over.
Yeah.
Wrestling's awesome. Von Raschke looked out of it on the floor and he aimlessly threw a chair from the audience and could have killed somebody. And I noted here, if you weren't an Atlanta wrestling fan in the 70s and 80s, you would think Thunderbolt Patterson is the most ridiculous wrestler ever, but he was tremendously over in the Atlanta area during this time. I mean, he was given a very racist kind of portrayal of African Americans in pro wrestling.
What was his gimmick?
You know, he would do all the shuck and jiving and cut the promo where he's just all over the place.
But that's who he is. What do you mean he was given? That's who
I think if you looked at wrestling's history, Way, they have not booked African-Americans in the 70s and 80s in the most flattering light. And we could definitely have the recently released Tony Atlas maybe on the show one week to talk about Saba Simba as one of the many examples of that.
All right.
This was actually Patterson's final wrestling match ever, Way.
Hmm.
And what a way to go out. Von Raschke applies the claw hold to Armstrong, but was saved by Patterson. Before you have to rewind, I'll repeat that. 50-plus-year-old Baron Von Raschke applied the claw hold to the in-prime Brad Armstrong and was saved by the 57-year-old Thunderbolt Patterson. Hot tag to Thunderbolt Patterson, who wins the match with the worst-looking throat thrust I've ever seen in my life to Rashke. Short match. Shivani noted a lot of excitement in this match. No, there was not. And they decided to replay the terrible-looking finish.
No, it was so bad. It was like a chop to the neck.
And, recently, wow. Ric Flair had left the WWF in January of this year and returned in February. And this would have been, perhaps, I think, his first pay-per-view appearance since coming back. And they booked him in a Flair for the Gold segment. He was not wrestling on this show, way. And it opens with Ric Flair coming out in a suit. This was like a talk show segment that the Horsemen used to do. And midway through this, we heard someone from the trucks just say, "Hi, John."
Yeah, it was Zbyszko. He gave you a shout-out.
Yeah, so I said hi back.
This is a Flair for the Gold!
Hi, John!
Rivalry 93!
Clearly, this was built around Tully Blanchard coming back, and the original Horsemen would be reformed, and Blanchard was not brought back in, and they had to introduce new member Paul Roma, who had a horrible mullet, and another guy that we are going to nominate for the Scott Putski Award, okay.
Paul Roma.
And what did you think of this segment, Way? I thought Ric Flair carried it. I thought Ole Anderson added nothing to it, and Paul Roma was a terrible, terrible surprise.
Fans booed Roma, or they just plain didn't care for Paul Roma. They were all expecting Tully, you could tell.
And then they buried him on the Horseman DVD. That's right. The worst Horseman ever. Worse than Sid.
And Arn Anderson, I just kept thinking, you know. Oh, yeah, Arn Anderson is about to wrestle Barry Windham for the NWA World title. Now he has to dress up in a suit and appear on this fake TV show just moments before his biggest match of his career.
Not good planning.
Doesn't seem like he's taking it that seriously.
Well, it's only the NWA title. It's not the world title, because believe me, there was a difference. Our next Legends match, Dory Funk Jr., who had the late Gene Kaniski in his corner, taking on Nick Bockwinkel, who I saw many times at the Cauliflower Alley Club. Every time I turned around, he was there. And I'm talking about the convention, whether it was getting food, around the slots, everywhere. I turned. Nick Bockwinkel was there. And he was accompanied by Vern Gagne. And
you're haunted by Bockwinkel.
Yes. Dory Funk Jr., should be noted here, won its first NWA title from Gene Kaniski in 1969, and they brought this up in the commentary. Another guy who's passed away, Johnny Valentine, the father of Greg Valentine, was brought in for commentary with Shivani and Zbyszko on this match. Bockwinkel was 58 years old at the time, looked in very good shape. This guy, definitely not nominated for the Scott Putski Award. This looked like a naturally in-shape man at 58.
Neither of these guys would have been nominated.
No. Funk Jr. was a young, spry 52 in this match. He was the young worker here.
And he was still an active competitor at this time.
He was. The forearm uppercuts of Dory Funk Jr. I thought looked very good in this match. Zbyszko laments on the politics that prevented these two from working with each other because of the NWA and AWA divide during the commentary. Totally different style at the time from what fans of the 90s are accustomed to. It was a match I thought that would never work in the WWF at the time. And the crowd, they were very respectful in this match. Kaniski tried to grab the leg of Bockwinkel on the apron, which was a rather funny spot. There was a pile driver by Funk Jr. attempted, but Bockwinkel gets his foot on the rope. We saw the spinning toe hold by Funk Jr. into a small package by Bockwinkel, which was a famous spot that they did in the Dory Funk Jr. and Jack Briscoe series of matches. Then we saw the figure four by Bockwinkel. Gene Kaniski made the save. Small package by Funk Jr. to end the match as the time limit expired, and they go into the ropes at the finish. I thought this was an enjoyable match, considering these two were 58 and 52, respectively, at the time, and they were booked to go 15 minutes on a live pay-per-view.
Yeah, it was very impressive for who they their age, as you mentioned. The finish was good, a lot of near falls, but we get another non-finish.
That's true. That would be number two on the evening. Up next, Way, Rick Rude, who was the United States champion, teaming with Paul Orndorff, who was the television champion, against Dustin Rhodes and Kensuke Sasaki. And Rude cuts his classic heel promo, and he announces that both are going to take their robes off, and they cut to a shot of a very fat white dude in the crowd who decided to lift his shirt during this. And I laughed. Rick Rude and Paul Orndorff are both going to be nominated for the Scott Putski Award, Way. Both men definitely working out hard.
We're up to
How many? Well,
how many Moolah of Moolah's men are there?
Five.
There are five Moolah's men. We are officially at 12.
12 nominees, everybody, yeah, for the Scott Putski Award on this show. I thought the crowd here, I don't know if this was the way the crowd was mic'd. Crowd reacted to nothing in this match. Rude attempted a tombstone. It was reversed by Rhodes, who hit it for a two count. Shivani called Kensuke Sasaki-san. Sounded odd. Orndorff pushes Sasaki off the top rope while the ref was turned, and Rude hit the Rude Awakening for the win. Very lame music for Rick Rude. It sounded like Whitney Houston was, like, remixed here. And Shivani calls the crowd tremendous, which it wasn't. And we get the heels retaining the titles here. Mm-hmm. Or no, they weren't. Were they the tag champs? I don't know.
They just had individual
two titles. Individual champions in a tag match. Yeah. Brilliant.
Yeah, I noted that Sasaki is usually one of the bigger men in Japan when he's wrestling, but here he looks so dwarfed, tiny.
Dwarfed by Putski's and Dustin Rhodes. Then we go to the WCW Hall of Fame inductions. It's hosted by Gordon Solie, who introduces the people inducted this year would be Lou Thesz, Vern Gagne, Mr. Wrestling 2, who I thought got the biggest pop of the night. And they brought up a story of how he was invited by Jimmy Carter to the White House, but he'd have to take his mask off for security reasons, and he turned down going to the White House.
Really?
So in a weird way, Mr. Wrestling 2 and Toby Keith have something in common, turning down the White House and having a wrestling connection. And the fourth inductee was Eddie Graham. This was accepted by Mike Graham, who was sporting some awesome shades and 80s hair. Is your phone going off?
No.
Yeah? Who is it? Is it urgent?
No.
Your friend? Need to take a break?
No.
Okay. Because I'd like to take a break, and I did during this match. Sting against the Prisoner in a bounty match, way. The Prisoner, formerly Kevin Wackles, a.k.a. Nails, who allegedly was sexually assaulted by Vince McMahon. At least that's what he claimed, and nobody believes. He basically got pissed at Vince. They had a fight backstage, and he was promptly fired and was probably the least credible witness in Vince McMahon's steroid trial in 1994.
Wow.
That's his claim to fame.
So what do you mean? What type of sexual assault was this?
He claimed that Vince sexually assaulted him in a locker room.
How?
I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe someone can do some digging on the internet and find out details for us. The Prisoner, he must have felt great to be here in WCW. The first thing he got was a chant of Boss Man from the crowd.
Yeah.
This gimmick, how it was able to be greenlit and put on WCW television is amazing to me. Given
why is that?
Something called intellectual property.
Yeah, but he was called The Prisoner.
Okay. They sued and were successful, the WWF was, in Scott Hall not being allowed to have a toothpick. Nails, here as The Prisoner, came out in his exact same jumpsuit he worked in the WWF. The Prisoner's offense consisted of choking Sting. That was his lone output of offense here. Awesome worker. Chokes him with cables, and the announcers note that the referee is being very lenient here. Well, that's being very lenient. Prisoner takes the worst-looking back body drop I've ever seen, and how does this end? Sting goes for a top rope clothesline. I thought the ref counted two, but apparently it was three. Shitty match.
The prisoner was no-selling some of Sting's punches, and then Zbysko mentions maybe the prisoner has a fist-proof vest on.
In WCW, that was probably a gimmick he had.
A fist-proof vest.
What does that mean?
A vest that makes you immune to fists, but kicks you're still going to hurt from. Slaps, you're going to die.
I'm glad you caught that.
Yeah, I just kept thinking throughout this match that, I mean, I just didn't care. I didn't care about this at all. I just kept thinking this was my dentist fighting my mechanic. I'd care a lot more. Because I'd actually know these people, and I'd actually care.
This pay-per-view is boring, everybody, as you can tell. Up next is a steel cage match. Ricky Steamboat and Shane Douglas, two of the better workers in WCW at the time, two of the better personalities at the time, they decided to put them in bodysuits and sombreros with masks as dos hombres. And why you would put two recognizable workers under masks.
But still call them
Ricky Steamboat and Shane Douglas. And have the announcers have to guess which one was which for the next 20 minutes. I don't have an answer for that.
I don't understand either. But, so what I gathered was that they mentioned that they had won in these outfits 2 weeks ago. So my only explanation would be that they were
wearing
these.
They're superstitious?
Yeah, they're superstitious people.
They have no faith in themselves as performers. So they're going to wear. Who comes up with this shit? They showed like two loan sharks watching at ringside. And they never went back to
them. No, they're talent agents.
Oh,
talent agents. Hollywood Blondes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we should mention it was Steve Austin and Brian Pillman defending the tag titles against Steamboat and Douglas. Los Dos Hombres. Zabisco calls their dance the Jumping Bean Jingle, which I'm sure didn't offend any Hispanics watching this match. We discover that Zabisco has used the same bootlaces for his entire career. He notes his own superstitions.
Yeah,
same laces.
That.
That's great.
That's very impressive.
Is that on his Wikipedia?
I don't know.
One pair of laces throughout his entire career.
It ought to be. You mean for both shoes? Just one?
I don't know.
One pair.
Yeah, one pair.
It would be
the same laces. He did say plural laces.
Yeah.
We saw a spot where Austin was dangling legs first from the top of the cage, and one of the hombres runs in to splash Austin, but Austin falls, and the babyface goes into the steel. This was like a comedy heel bump.
Yeah, it was weird. I mean, like you mentioned, they had Austin hang from the top of the cage. Completely illogical, but it was impressive looking.
We have Pillman grab a towel and is choking one of either Steamboat or Douglas, I don't know who, and the ref starts counting him, and I'm wondering. So we can choke a guy with cables, and it's okay. But a towel in a cage could warrant a DQ if not broken on five. Austin and Pillman attempt what is called the Atomic Blonde. Pillman's launched off the top but lands on his opponent's knees. Steamboat's on the top rope. He unmasks, climbs to the top of the cage for a cross body on the Blondes for a two count. Timekeeper rings the bell, buying the finish, which it was not. And they weren't even booked to win, so clearly the timekeeper was not clued into anything. We get lots of near falls by Steamboat and Douglas, ends with Austin hitting the stun gun to pin Douglas, and the Hollywood Blondes retain the tag titles.
Another very good finish, really popped the crowd.
Yeah, this was a good match. It was very good. And that brings us to our NWA title match, Way, our first of two world title matches on this show. Barry Windham defending the gold against Arn Anderson. Windham has left the Horsemen. There was no heel or face dynamic in this match for me. Both traded DDTs for near falls, and they established that there's different rules for WCW that don't apply for the NWA, such as being thrown over the top rope. This is allowed, I think, in the NWA, but not WCW. In case you weren't confused enough, because you were watching a WCW pay-per-view, but we were going by NWA rules for this match. Holy fuck. Windham did a lot of color in this match.
Did he? He did. Yes. Yes. I mean,
did you watch this?
I did. I did watch this. Yes. He had a great looking blade job.
There was. This is where the crowd miking, I think, was an issue because I saw a woman yell, "Come on, Barry!" You could see it on her, read her lips. So, "Come on, Barry!" And you couldn't hear a thing. And she was in the front row, so that was an issue.
That's not an issue. Come on. You're just nitpicking.
Well, the crowd it was dead. It sounds as dead as we are recapping this. They announced that if there is a blood stoppage, then the champion retains. I'm like, that's not true.
Is that an NWA rule?
I guess so. That doesn't apply in today.
I don't mind that, actually. I think if you want to separate.
Why wouldn't you just gig yourself and you retain the title then?
Because that would be a cowardly way of losing, and you would be...
It's a cowardly way of retaining. You cut yourself and you're bleeding. You can't continue.
Anyway.
That's lame.
Oh, what I meant was I think it's a good idea to have different rules for different brands. Like I think something to separate, let's say, Raw and SmackDown, for instance. They should have a distinct set of rules, like the National League and the American League.
That's true. They have the pitcher at bat.
Think about that.
All right.
Let's finish this.
Biggest reaction of the match, Way, was Arn Anderson hitting a spine buster, but Windham rolls out of the ring and teases leaving. He's the babyface. He teases leaving with the title.
He is? Are you sure? Anderson's the babyface.
No, the Horsemen were heels.
Really?
At this point, they were heels.
You sure?
I'm pretty sure.
But, like, I mean, with the returning Ric Flair and Ric Flair having that TV show, introducing the girl.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Anyway.
Anderson throws him back in and tosses. The referee immediately regrets it, and he's grabbing his hair. Like, what did I just do? And with the ref down, Wyndham clocks Anderson with the title and gets the pin for the win. Wyndham retains. Maybe Wyndham was the heel. I don't know. Main event time, way. Big Van Vader versus British Bulldog for the WCW title. They state how Bulldog is going to win this match for Cactus Jack, who's in the hospital due to Vader powerbombing him, and that would lead to the amnesia angle. Harley Race was in the corner of Big Van Vader, and they show a sign that read, "Whoop, Vader's House of Pain, Serious Punishment." Vader, a perfect example, I thought, way, of someone used very effectively in WCW, not so much WWF.
Yeah,
he was a really good heel here in WCW.
He was excellent. His wrestling was fantastic. He has great-looking strikes.
Worked good for a big man.
Yeah. I just questioned why he never reached the same success in the WWF.
We saw Vader dive on the outside. He misses Bulldog and hits the barricade stomach first and goes into the front row. I noted Bulldog here, also a nominee for the Scott Putzke Award. He would be lucky number 13 on this show. Mm-hmm. Vertical suplex by Bulldog to Vader looked very impressive. I mean, Vader was a good 350 pounds here being vertical suplex
almost
by Bulldog.
Almost as good as Toby Keith.
Yes, almost. Didn't have quite the structure of Toby Keith. Bulldog lifts Vader and drops him right on his tailbone in a sitting position. That looked very painful. Shivani states that we've seen some classic matches tonight. Have we, Way?
Oh, tons, yeah.
Top rope splash by Vader. He was selling the sternum prior, and then he did a splash off the top rope. Didn't make a lot of sense there. Harley Race dropped a knee onto Bulldog on the floor, which is impressive to see, because I saw Harley at Cauliflower Alley, and he was, not getting around so well. Yeah. So these knee shots at that age was probably not the best, but nonetheless, it was a good spot. An electric chair by Bulldog to Vader. Vader dives into the corner. He's caught by Bulldog for a running power slam, but Race breaks the count. Vader then just grabs a chair on the outside and attacks Bulldog for the DQ finish. And then the job squad runs out. They bump for Vader. Sting runs in and takes down Vader with a top rope clothesline. And it ends with Tony Schiavone, Larry Zbyszko, and Vern Gagne, who say tonight has been a real eye-opener for Vern Gagne. And WCW has so much talent, and he was shocked. And he says the Kings of Wrestling are in WCW. Very lame finish for a main event. And what was a very good match, I thought. I liked the main event. I thought these two worked pretty well together. I thought Vader, I wouldn't say underrated at all. I think a lot of people realized he was a very good big man at the time, especially in that early 90s period between his work in WCW and Japan. And you probably could tell from that review, folks, I was just not into this show. It was just very...
Me neither.
Very boring show, very by the numbers. It was like nothing atrocious that we can even make fun of. It was there.
I feel like this type of show, this is no doubt a very old school booked type of show.
Well, it was Bill Watts at the time I believe he was still booking at the time.
And I think to be really invested in something like this, you really have to be involved in the storylines and the characters and, you know, the way we're watching this show, given our age. It just didn't really work.
Yeah, this was one I think our 25-year-old ages were a bit of a victim of.
Yeah. Wait, so I can't really 26. Knock anything. I'm 26. Yeah, I can't really knock anything on it, but
I'm giving it a 3 out of 10. I was impressed with Bockwinkel and Dory Funk Jr. just for what they did at their ages, and I did like the main event. I thought the cage match was good.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing was like absolutely atrocious other than Thunderbolt Patterson's finish, but I mean the guy was pretty old at the time.
Yeah. I'll give it the same.
Okay.
3 out of 10.
So that's Slambury 93, folks.
Well, let's pick a winner for this Scott Putzke Award.
Let's run through them.
Well, the nominees are, first, all five of them, we have Moolah's Men. Secondly, Marcus Alexander Bagwell. Number 3, Van Hammer. Number 4, Sid Vicious. Number 5, Jimmy Snuka. 6, Paul Roma. Rick Rude. Paul Orndorff. And lastly, the British Bulldog. Who do you give it to?
There were some guys in Moolah's army there who were just looked gross.
Sure.
In terms of the performers, I would say my short list would be Bulldog and Van Hammer.
Bulldog and Van Hammer. Okay.
Bulldog looked really big. You see, Bulldog was also You know, he left the WWF because of him and Warrior were involved in some narcotics use or selling as well. And then came to WCW where there was no testing. So I assume Bulldog was, anytime you start with a new promotion and there's new drug, there's no drug testing, you're going to see a lot more. I'm going to go towards Van Hammer. He just looked, he was very old too and just looked jacked. So yeah, sure. I'll go with Van Hammer.
Van Hammer, ladies and gentlemen, you're winner of the Scott Putzke Award for Slamboree 1993.
Do you have a pick or are you going to go with Van Hammer?
I'll go with Van Hammer, sure.
Okay, so Van Hammer. A lot of nominees tonight, so.
We'll get
Good job by the WCW roster of 93.
Somebody inform Scott Putzke on his Facebook page, and we'll get him to present the award.
Every week we should have Scott Putzke come on.
Our ultimate goal.
We won't tell him what the criteria is.
Yeah, we won't. I mean, I think our ultimate goal is for him to join the Facebook group on his own. Don't send him an invite or something, but if he were to ever join it on his own.
He'll hate us.
Yeah, he will.
All right, let's get into some feedback, because we have lots of it, folks. We'll go back and forth here. I'll start from Jordan Ducharme. Early TNA wasn't the worst wrestling ever by a long shot, but it did incorporate a few of the worst ideas ever. It makes for a funny show watching what we have on TV now. I thought their first show was atrocious, and they did at least get better in 2002. That's all I'll say.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Do you want to read one?
Oh, yes. Why don't we go to this one from Evan Harden. Hey, John, nice review of the first TNA episode. It reminded me of Bash at the Beach 2000. Stupid match gimmicks and stupid gimmicks. And the whole Hogan getting fired that night and Russo complaining about politics in the backstage. LOL. Wow. If you want to do a good show to review, do the WWE Chris Mann's show.
Christmas.
He wrote Chris Mann's.
Oh, Chris Mann's.
Chris Mann's Christmas show on Raw from 1997.
Regular caller to the law, Chris from LA, writes, oh, do I remember Slamboree 93. I remember the match between the Hollywood Blondes and Dos Hombres and how much of a ripoff the Los Conquistadors gimmick that I thought it was. I must say what I remember most with Thunderbolt Patterson, watching him act a fool in the ring. I thought to myself one thing, exactly how many 40-ounce alcoholic beverage did this man drink before the match? Watching this guy reminded me of the way my drunk Uncle Roscoe acts at family reunions. On one hand, you want to laugh at him making a fool of himself, but deep down you know he has a serious problem. Before the match, I remember Thunderbolt saying to the Russian guys, they tell me that Bob had a bad operation on his knee, but it don't matter to me, I'll kick both of y'all's ya-da. I had no clue what this dude said, and I even remember Zbyszko legitimately wondering what the hell he just said. I swear Thunderbolt spent more time dancing around the ring, shucking and jiving, than he actually did wrestling. I think he also told Armstrong to take yo shirt off. Take yo shirt off, baby. And watching a spry young Brad Armstrong having to sell those old Russians who looked like they had leukemia was just sad. Thank you in advance for reviewing this. I'm looking forward to listening to it. Keep up the good work, and thank you for giving me something to listen to while I'm at work.
All right. Then we got Ross Learn, who says, just heard your WCW review for this week, and he's referring to the, uncensored review that we did 2 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
Excellent and very amusing. I'm looking forward to hearing your review of the first NWA TNA telecast, which he's probably already heard. I actually purchased this one. I really enjoyed these early shows. One of the interesting aspects of these early shows was the cage dancers. Reminds me a lot of the CMLL shows on Saturdays. I would like to suggest a show you may wish to review. I watched it on the weekend from some old TNA DVDs I had. And he just lists a bunch of shows.
Okay.
It was silly but amusing. Not amusing like the current TNA situation, but really amusing. Take care, guys. Thanks for the great reviews, Ross.
We go to Dan Power, who writes, what stands out for me about Slamboree 93 is the Sting versus the Prisoner, a.k.a. Nails match. Nails is one of my all-time favorite heels. Not that he was very talented, it's just that when I was a kid, he scared the shit out of me. So did Papa Shango and the Berserker. They, too, have a special place in my heart as great heels because they actually gave me bad dreams. He gave us bad dreams, I think, this week. But that whole gimmick of being a madman prisoner out for revenge against the big boss man was so well done, and the voice altering the WWF did with Nails made him even scarier. I came to respect Nails even more when I became a smart mark and found out he got so pissed off he legitimately beat up Vince McMahon. What a cool, badass dude.
Yeah. How would you react if somebody sexually assaulted you?
Allegedly.
course you would beat them up. We got one from Jamal Nikolai Hepburn. I really enjoyed the WCW Uncensored review, and I was wondering, in honor of Russo Hogan Bischoff's reunion in TNA, aka WCW Part 2, where young guys still get buried, can you guys do a review of the infamous Bash at the Beach 2000 show with Hogan walking out of the company? Can we? We'll
eventually,
see.
Sure.
Yeah, eventually. Yeah, we'll get to that, definitely.
We'll finish up here. Patrick McHugh writes, funny little thing I noticed about the TNA show. When Francine is walking up the ramp, there's a little kid with a camera that is pointing it at her ass. This kid looks around 8. Well, that's disturbing.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Any more feedback?
Yeah, I got one more from Casper Barton. I remember the first TNA pay-per-view when I watched it back in 2002. The Flying Elvises was just the most odd trio gimmick ever. The midgets masturbating. Oh, good. Oh, I almost forgot about that. The Johnsons was just hilarious to watch. The show wasn't the worst thing ever, but they did at least improve later on. It was fun to see a lot of the talents outside WWE. Sonny Siaki was a talent I was very fond of. Shame he stopped wrestling. I believe this show was the first show for Scott Hall since the plane ride from hell in WWE, but everyone was overshadowed by the human penises. Haha. TNA was born and going to be the home of simply the greatest, Orlando Jordan.
Oh, yeah, that's Casper, the big Orlando Jordan fan. Also, a correction from last week. I noted that Ken Shamrock, that was his first match in TNA in wrestling since he had left the WWF. I was mistaken, as Andrew McMahon did point out. He did wrestle on the very first Antonio Inoki New Year's Eve show in December of 2000. He teamed with Don Fry against Keiji Muto and Nobuhiko Takada. So I stand corrected on that note. Thank you, Andrew. And you can always leave feedback at reviewaway.com on our Facebook wall. Requests you can also put in. So if you have any thoughts on our reviews or shows that we are going to be reviewing in the future, leave all your feedback there. It is reviewaway.com. Let's try and get those numbers up.
Yeah.
I want to hit 800, Way.
Yeah, we gotta make more goals. I think the problem is we just kind of got lazy and relaxed. And
we hit that WrestleMania high. I mean, March was a solid month for us, and April was very blasé.
Now we want more.
We want to grow, everyone, and we want to get back to doing a contest. So our contest this week is come up with a contest idea.
Yeah.
So post your ideas on the wall group or create a thread on the discussion board, and we'll review the contests. And the best contest will be the contest going forward, and the person who picks the contest that we use as the contest will get a DVD.
Wow, that's spectacular. So this
that's how Review Away does it.
Two contests in one contest.
Perfect. That's so, Way, as we finish out here, I made a terrible selection, I think, in Slamboree 93. So
no.
I'm looking for you to pick up the ball and return us back to something solid we can review. So
you made
the pressure is on.
You made a relevant choice because you had just gone to Cauliflower Alley with Jason.
That was the tie-in, but this show left a bit to be desired for our review.
Well, I'm sorry, I forget your name right now, but
John.
One of our listeners on the Facebook group had posted a number of suggestions that were not pay-per-view related that I really looked forward to watching. No, mostly because they were shorter than a typical pay-per-view, but also because they were highly entertaining from what I remember. And for next week's review, I would love to review the WWE's appearance on the TV show, The Weakest Link.
All right. We'll go back.
There are two episodes there. Yeah, there are two of them. And they're just, from what I remember, it was just so weird because you had Kane on one of them in his full get-up. It's Stephanie and Triple H on one of them, and Booker T was just complete idiot, and he was embarrassing to
all
watch.
Right.
So The Weakest Link next week.
All right, we'll review The Weakest Link with the WWE talent next week, and to go out here, Way, I didn't really have a great song selection to pick, so.
Wow, man, you really dropped the ball this week, Jimmy.
Well, I have something, so obviously. Billy Corgan, very, very big wrestling fan.
Yeah, he was at WrestleMania, actually.
He was at WrestleMania. So he's been working a lot with Courtney Love. He was working with her on their big album. Of course, they did date back in the past, but then during the whole before she put out the CD, they had a big falling out, mm-hmm. and Corgan was pissed, saying, "You better not release anything I helped you with."
You're talking about her
new album with Hole.
Oh, her new album.
Oh yeah.
I thought it was the old album because Corgan had worked on like Celebrity Skin and
Yeah. No, he worked on that, but he was working on her with this new stuff as well.
Because the exact same thing had happened before, where Courtney Love didn't give him credit and he got pissed off, but he went back and worked with her again, and now the same thing is happening.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I thought we'd go out with Hole's new song, Skinny Little Bitch, which is an appropriate song for Courtney Love.
And not Van Hammer.
Skinny little bitch.
Baby, come, baby, let it go.